I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me, running down the way of life, I'm fighting and crossing that key. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my countryman, you're walking on the fighting side of me. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a fought and died to be. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a fought and died key. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be warned. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people, because those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening in the European heartland. Well, one more free speech outrage. And this occurred in Montreal just the other day. And here's the story. Man who praised Quebec mosque shooter in online videos gets 30 days in jail. Now, that's for an opinion. Laval, Quebec. A Quebec man who was found guilty last May of inciting hatred against Muslims has been sentenced to 30 days in jail. The sentence handed down to Pierre Dion of Terrebonne, Quebec, Tuesday, went beyond what the Crown had recommended. The courts are so insanely hateful of free speech and, of course, eager to punish white people for any criticisms of one of the new privileged minorities, in this case, Muslims. Quebec court judge Gilles Garneau sentenced the 49-year-old man at the courthouse in Laval, opting for a stricter sentence to send a message of dissuasion to the community. Dion published two videos of himself this year, January 28th and 29th, the two-year anniversary of an attack on a Quebec mosque that left six Muslims dead. In the videos, he praised the convicted killer and urged Canadians to kick Muslims out of the country. He was arrested 2 days later. The Crown recommended a sentence of community service, while the defense had suggested 18 months of probation, strict restrictions on internet usage, and a $1,500 donation to a Muslim organization. The defense suggested that. The poor fellow would have been better off self-represent. Yet, you know, these lawyers are scumbags. Garneau instead ordered incarceration to be served 1 day a week, beginning June the 21st. When the verdict came down on May 22nd, Garneau, that's the judge, said there wasn't any doubt to him the accused's remarks were directed at an identifiable group as indicated in the criminal code, in this case, Muslims. Well, yeah, but is it hatred? Is it willfully promoting hatred? Supposing for the betterment of the country, you feel that a certain group just does not fit in and should be expelled. I don't think that's willfully promoting hatred. It's opposition. Now, the fact that the man praised the man who shot the half dozen Muslims 2 years ago. That I think many of us would find that bad taste. Not a very worthy sentiment. I don't think we should applaud the killing of unarmed people, frankly. But to put the man in jail, you know, the parameters of free speech are closing in more and more and more. And I'm reminded of something Doug Christie, my longtime friend, a great free speech advocate, Canada's probably premier free speech lawyer of his generation, what he said very often and repeated is that you only have the freedoms you're prepared to fight for and practice. You know, if you don't cherish free speech, they'll be only too happy to take it away. Well, I was visiting a prisoner, not a political prisoner, but a prisoner up at the Vanier Detention Center today in Milton, Ontario. And the lobby, the visitor's lobby, where you go and await to be called to see the prisoners, and where behind opaque, I guess, plexiglass, you get to see a shadowy prison authority and slip your identification through a slot. I mean, it's incredible. It really is incredible, the paranoia and so-called security. But anyway, you do that, you can leave money for your prisoner, and in this reception area, there are a number of signs, sloganeering. One is, let's see, homophobia and transphobia, there are no innocent bystanders to homophobia and transphobia. Hate hurts everybody, does it? If I don't happen to like a particular group, how does that hurt anybody? Now, if I go and punch people in the face, that's a different matter. Anyway, along with other exhortatory signs and so on, there's a framed and bordered a letter from the prison warden, a Donna M. Keating. She's the superintendent of the Vanier Center. And she says, I have the courage to oppose all forms of racism, sexism, anti-Semitism, homophobia in all its forms. I thought, well, whoop-de-doo for you. You have the courage. What does it take courage to jump on the politically correct bandwagon? It would take courage to say, well, you may not like that person's opinion, but they've got a right to an opinion. Well, what's sexism? Well, I guess sexism could be seen as, ideally, there are different roles for men and women. Or biologically and psychologically, women are better at nurturing, and men are better at perhaps providing. Women are better at taking care of young children. Men are perhaps better at relating to older children, you know, like teenagers. I mean, that is human nature. Women are better at being caregivers and creating and maintaining a household. Men are better at other things. That's recognizing sexual differences. Is that sexism? Well, for some people, you bet it is.
Anyway, I was so offended. I thought, what's this woman thinking? This is what she said. I have the courage, well, bully for you, to oppose all forms of racism, sexism, anti-Semitism, homophobia in all their its forms. And then she ended off her self-congratulatory letter by patting herself on the back and saying that she does her work with fairness and fairness and integrity. And well, you know, maybe it'd be better if somebody else said that about you than pumping your own blowing your own horn. But anyway, that's what I saw at the prison. Now, Canada's desperate liberals seem eager to bring back the internet censorship section of the old Canadian Human Rights Act, which is called Section 13. And Section 13 made it an offense to repeatedly communicate telephonically, and that was determined to be over the internet, material that was likely to expose to hatred or contempt privileged groups, you know, race, religion, sex, sexual orientation, etc., etc. But that doesn't mean Christians. So this was a discriminatory practice, and you could be fined for that. If you denounced whichever busybody, like a Richard Warman, who attacked you, then you could be fined further for retaliation. Oh, you hurt the poor person's feelings. He feels so vulnerable. Like, he keeps on attacking people, but he feels really vulnerable. There is some talk that the Liberals may try to bring it back as a Hail Mary shot that may appeal to their base. Well, this is an excellent show from The Rebel about just that that appeared a couple of days ago, and I'll play that for you. This is about the failure of the Conservatives to do something about it. The Conservatives, who are good on some aspects of opposition, have really dropped the ball, or so far have dropped the ball on this one, and is actually Conservative backbenchers brought forth a private members bill and, in fact, a repealed Section 13 in 2013. So I'm going to play this for you, and I think it's extremely well done. I'm just about to play that now. This is from The Rebel of the Rebel Media a couple of days ago, and hammering the moral weakness of the Conservatives. Hopefully they will find their courage to continue to stick up for freedom of speech, because we are in a battle, a desperate battle, with the censors, who want nothing more than, or better than, to silence political dissent or politically incorrect speech. And that's exactly what the old Section 13 did, because truth was no defense, intent was no defense, and they didn't even have to prove that there had been any real harm done. You see, that's the diabolical thing. Because it's worded that communications that are likely to expose to hatred or contempt. They don't have to show that anybody actually felt anything.
And the very offense itself, likely to expose a person to hatred or contempt.
Okay.
In 2013, Stephen Harper's conservatives voted to repeal Section 13 of the Canadian Human Rights Act. That's the censorship provision that made it an offense to hurt someone's feelings, or actually, even worse, it made it an offense to potentially cause one person to have hard feelings about another person. The language really is that vague. It really was a feelings crime, a thought crime, not even a word crime. Here's the text of the now repealed Section 13. It was illegal to publish anything, including on the internet, that, quote, is likely to expose a person or persons to hatred or contempt. So that created the counterfeit human right not to be offended, which, of course, that's not a real thing. What that really was government power, the power to silence you, masquerading as a human right. That odious law was finally repealed in 2013, but now Justin Trudeau's Liberals are looking to bring it back. They're studying this at Parliament's Justice Committee right now. And to my horror, Andrew Scheer's Conservatives haven't lifted a finger against it. They just haven't. They're not actively cheering it on, that I can see. But they have made a team decision, a party-wide decision, specifically not to champion freedom of speech. I can't name a more important issue for Conservatives, actually. It's more... I'm worried that Andrew Scheer cares more about what the media party thinks than what... in 2013, but now it's freedom of speech. I can't name a more important issue for Conservatives, actually. It's more important than taxes or immigration or fighting terrorism or respecting our military. It's more important than any trade deal, more important than criminal justice, because if you don't have free speech, you can't talk meaningfully about any of those other issues. So it's so clear to me. The Liberal government, really any government, it's not just Liberals, all politicians, they don't like their critics, but the Liberals in particular are seeking to shut down criticism of them on key political issues, especially immigration, by the way. They're looking to silence speech that isn't governed by our criminal code. I'm fine with our criminal code, generally. But they're looking to silence legitimate political criticism under this hurt feelings law, because it's easier to shut someone up than debating them. Here's a mashup of Justin Trudeau and Ahmed Hassan, the immigration minister, both of them personally attacking us here at The Rebel, for example, reading word for word the same talking points, claiming that we're fake news that ought to be condemned.
It is disappointing to see the Conservatives and the member opposite engage in peddling Rebel media conspiracy theories.
It is disappointing to see the Conservatives engage in peddling Rebel media conspiracy theories.
It is disappointing
to see the Conservatives
engage in peddling
Rebel media
conspiracy theories.
Now, normally I'd be flattered by that. I have no problem with politicians bad-mouthing me, feelings mutual. It's a sign that we at The Rebel are not bought and paid for, like, say, the CBC, who seem to specialize in sending female reporters on first-date-style walk-and-talks with Trudeau, where they ask really tough questions like this.
Last book you've read or the book you're reading?
The Patch, which was Chris Turner's history of the oil patch. But I'm also about to start the new Ken Follett with the third book that is the sequel to Pillars of the Earth.
That's your nerdy side.
That's my.
Or sci-fi, nerdy side.
No, no, it's not sci-fi. It's just a sweeping historical epic, I'm sure, but I haven't started it yet. So,
what kind of music are you listening to right now, if you have time, or podcasts?
No, I don't. I've tried. I run regularly, and I've tried to do the podcast thing, but it hasn't really I don't like people talking in my ears when I'm trying to run. I like to sort of vibe out.
Yeah, I'd rather be hated by Justin Trudeau than to be his concubine. But the problem is that Trudeau isn't just arguing with us here. He's not just condemning us here. He wants to ban us. He and his point person on the job, Karina Gould, have made it crystal clear they want to silence Trudeau's enemies, not to debate us. This was first told to Facebook directly by Trudeau. to their chief operating officer, Sheryl Sandberg, that if Facebook didn't silence critics like us in the run-up to the election, Trudeau would force them to. Remember, he used that phrase, fake news. That's what he calls anyone who disagrees with him, and he's now demanding that social media companies comply with him. Trudeau met with other censors in Paris recently, Emmanuel Macron, the hated president of France, who's really at war with his own people, and Jacinda Ardern, the New Zealand prime minister, who has been revealed recently to be beholden to Chinese interests and is pursuing a very Chinese-style policy of government censorship. So Trudeau and Macron and Ardern met behind closed doors in Paris with social media companies to announce that they have persuaded most social media companies to crack down on their critics in the next election. Now, that's deeply troubling. We see purges of conservatives already from Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. But if you're purged from those companies, you're silenced, but you're still free. You don't go to jail. You're not fined. You're not dragged through a court system for years. And that extra edge, though, that punitive side, that embarrassing, time-consuming, grinding, psychological warfare side of Section 13, the prosecutions, that is what appeals to Trudeau and his Liberal Party. They don't deserve the name Liberal anymore, by the way. It comes from the Latin word for freedom. That's where Section 13 comes in. The left is generally happy when a conservative voice is silenced online. Sometimes leftists go the extra mile. They want them out of a job, or they boycott a company, or they harass someone's employer. But Section 13 of the Canadian Human Rights Act would go further than any of this. It would expose any conservative voice to tens of thousands of dollars in fines and legal costs. And the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal, it's a kangaroo court run not by real judges, but by non-judge activists. They have tremendous power to do weird and strange things that a normal court couldn't. I remember when I was prosecuted by the Alberta version of the Canadian Human Rights Commission, that Alberta version literally demanded, in writing, that I not only pay cash to a radical Muslim activist who was offended by me, but the Human Rights Commission actually demanded that I give him 2 full pages in the magazine that I published back then, unedited, for him to say literally whatever he wanted to say about me. I'm serious, that's actually what the Human Rights Commission demanded from me, that I give up 2 pages of my magazine to some Sharia law thug from Pakistan. No normal court would even think of that. That's so weird. But Human Rights Commissions aren't real courts. That's what this is about. It's not even about censoring people now. The social media companies do a pretty good job of censoring for Trudeau already. This is about humiliating conservatives, deterring conservatives, demonizing them, costing them money. It's really about vengeance for Trudeau. I won't get into all the procedural reasons it's built that way, but a few examples include the fact that unlike a civil lawsuit in a real court, in a human rights kangaroo court, the complainer doesn't have to pay for his own lawyer. Unlike a civil lawsuit in a real court, if you're wrongfully sued and you win, you don't get your costs paid by the false accuser. Unlike in a criminal lawsuit in real court, you don't have to be convicted beyond a reasonable doubt. Unlike a criminal lawsuit in real court, you have no legal aid help if you're poor. It's the worst of all worlds, these kangaroo courts. It's exactly what Justin Trudeau would love. I mean, think about it. He tried to let his criminal friends like SNC-Lavalin off the hook, and he tried to convict innocent people like Vice Admiral Mark Norman. He couldn't get away with that in a real court. That's why I call these human rights commissions a kangaroo court. That's one reason why Harper shut down Section 13, and it's a big reason why hucksters like Trudeau like him. And the very offense itself, likely to expose a person to hatred or contempt. Give me one more reason on that, likely to. So maybe it'll happen, maybe it won't. But it's all in the future, so you can't even say I didn't do it. No one said you did. You don't actually have to have done anything wrong to be guilty of it. Just maybe something in the future could happen, but you could be charged. Now, expose a person to hatred or contempt. So by writing something on the internet, or making a video, or drawing a cartoon, or sharing something on Facebook, you could expose someone to the human feeling of hate. I'll admit, when I was young and I saw the movie Schindler's List about the Holocaust, it gave me hard feelings towards Germany, or at least some Germans, or at least the Nazis. Does that make Schindler's List hate speech? Of course not. But is that movie likely to, as in maybe it would, maybe it wouldn't, expose a person to hatred or contempt? Well, of course. Of course it could. That's an old example. How about a new example? There's a new movie out there right now called The Hate U Give. Title sort of gives it away, doesn't it? If you watch that movie and have some hard feelings, whoever made the movie is guilty of Section 13. Emotions are a natural part of the human personality. We're all a little bit different in that. In fact, I think that's the point of art and all communications, fiction, nonfiction, to cause an emotional response as part of being human. And not all emotions are comedies and laughter. Sometimes there are tragedies. Sometimes there are calls to action. Sometimes there are memorials. Watch the movie Killing Fields. Watch Apocalypse Now. Watch American Sniper. I watched that and I hated Al-Qaeda even more. How about you? Could a powerful piece of art or political commentary or even just a joke expose a person, the feelings of hatred, of contempt by another person? Of course it could. In fact, without a doubt, since there's no way to measure hurt feelings or being offended, I should point out that truth is not a defense to Section 13. You can say something true that makes a person have hard feelings. In fact, the truth is much more enraging than fiction, isn't it? Fair comment is irrelevant. Religious belief is irrelevant. Simply being mistaken is irrelevant. The only test is, did you or didn't you say something that might in the future cause someone to have hard feelings about someone else? So of course this law had a 100% conviction rate for a quarter of a century on the books. There literally is no defense to it. Every one of us is guilty of this law every single day, unless we literally talk to no other human being ever. Every one of us does something that could maybe cause offense in the future. Of course, we're all guilty. It's just who's charged. So of course the liberals want this back. And of course the lawyers and the bureaucrats want it back. Free money, free bureaucracy building, lots of power, free way to stick it to their enemies list. But what about Andrew Scheer? You know, when he ran for the leadership of the Conservatives and he eked out that razor-thin win on the final ballot, back then Scheer promised to fight for free speech, especially on campus, by the way. He sounded really good back then, but, you know, since then he's literally deleted that policy from his website. You can't find it. And he's gone wobbly out of fear of the media mob, fear that he'll be demonized, too. During recent hearings on hate speech at the Liberal-run Justice Committee, Michael Cooper, a conservative MP from St. Albert, dared to push back at the hateful assertion by a Muslim lobbyist that conservatives were to blame for a mass murder in New Zealand. Now, Cooper pushed back, saying the terrorist in New Zealand himself denied that he was a conservative, in fact said he admired communist China. That's true, and it was a rebuttal to a false accusation.
Mr. Suri, I take great umbrage with your defamatory comments to try to link conservatism with violent and extremist attacks. They have no foundation, they're defamatory, and they diminish your credibility as a witness.
But after the liberals all claimed that they were offended, it's easy to say, isn't it? Andrew Scheer literally fired Cooper from the committee, saying it was inappropriate. Well, just say it, Andrew. Michael Cooper's words were likely to cause hatred or contempt. I mean, could be, right? And worse, and weirdly, Andrew Scheer ordered the remaining conservatives on the committee to vote to turn off the video cameras when Mark Stein, Lindsay Shepherd, and John Robson testified at that committee. Understand how nuts that is. The conservatives invited those public figures to testify. They invited them to come to Parliament, presumably to testify for free speech, and they showed up. They took time out of their days. And then, when they were all sitting in Parliament about to give their testimony, the Conservative MPs literally voted to turn off the cameras on them so the world could not see them arguing for free speech. According to Andrew Lawton, our friend who was right there, the order to have these Conservatives vote against the cameras came from Scheer himself, to literally vote to turn off the cameras on their own witnesses they had invited. What is going on here? Why did Scheer's point person on the free speech battle literally cheer for Karina Gould in committee earlier this year, complimenting her on how sharp she looked and telling her she should go harder and faster on the censorship?
Minister, always lovely to see you. I love that necklace, by the way. That's just beautiful. So I'm asking you, please, if you are ready in regards to the social media platform, willing to make the hard decisions, to take the hard actions, and not 6 months from now, but now, please.
What is going on here? Why is not a single Conservative MP allowed to even talk about this issue? Why have they all been whipped? Why are they not just being passive, but actually voting to suppress free speech witnesses and calling for Karina Gould to go faster and harder on censorship. What is going on here? How is this possibly conservative? How does this possibly help the party politically? Forget about doing right and wrong. How does this help them win? Don't they have any sense of self-preservation, even knowing that all the people censored will be conservatives, of course? Does Andrew Scheer think that if he is very, very quiet, the censorship tiger will devour him last? What is going on? How did the party of Stephen Harper, which voted to repeal Section 13, unanimously they voted to repeal Section 13, how is that party now cheering or at least standing quietly for Trudeau to revive Section 13? Well, I guess because there was one man who did not vote to repeal Section 13, Andrew Scheer himself, who was Speaker of the House that day and thus didn't vote. What an irony. He was the man who, as Speaker, controls everyone else's freedom of speech in Parliament, the man who was effectively the judge of the Court of Parliament, who could rule a word unparliamentary, who could demand an MP retract a statement. Maybe, just maybe, he fell in love with the power to regulate speech. He was called the Speaker, after all. If he himself could tell a Prime Minister or a Cabinet Minister to sit down and shut up and retract a word, I can imagine that would feel pretty powerful. I don't know. That's a theory. Can you come up with a better explanation? Maybe there's a simple theory that defending free speech isn't cool now like it was back in 2013 with the mean girls in the media party, that is, the Globe and Mail, the Toronto Star, the CBC, the new junk websites like Huffington Post and BuzzFeed and Vice. They all hate free speech now for some reason because, well, I know the reason, because they know conservatives use free speech to get around the leftist mainstream media. So if Andrew Scheer were to stand up for free speech today, all those media reporters would attack him hard, much harder than Stephen Harper had to deal with back in 2013. In fact, back then, most media, at least grudgingly, supported Harper's move for free speech. Today, the same media party would love to censor any conservative because the media have become politically radicalized. But also out of their own business interests, they would love to silence online competitors, even us. So what about you? What about you, dear viewer? I know that most people who watch my shows are Conservative Party members. Some are Maxime Bernier supporters. I would ask you to sign a petition to Justin Trudeau to have him stop Section 13. But I know that, of course, Trudeau wouldn't listen. He'd throw it in the garbage. He doesn't listen to anyone. He loves censorship. He will bring it to law if he can. But what if I asked you to sign a petition not to the Prime Minister or to Karina Gould, but to Andrew Scheer himself, to ask him to take off the whip from his own MPs, to ask him to let his own MPs be true conservatives, or at least to speak their conscience, to allow them to stand up for freedom of speech? I'm not going to ask Andrew Scheer to let Michael Cooper back in. We know he won't. He has too much pride invested in that weird firing. But to stop Section 13 itself, a great effort by countless grassroots conservatives for years finally convinced Stephen Harper and the Conservative Party to repeal it. It took years. And that repeal has stood for 6 years, and we're all the better for it. Don't let Stephen Harper's achievement be undone. Don't go quietly along with Justin Trudeau and Karina Gould. And don't, for God's sake, be an active participant in it by voting to turn off the cameras on Mark Stein and Lindsay Shepherd and John Robson. So I've drafted a petition, but it's to Andrew Scheer. Look, I know he can't stop Section 13 on his own. He lacks the tools to do that. But if he and his MPs make a proper fuss about it and engage the remaining true journalists left in this country and perhaps engage the larger civil society and use all the tools in their toolbox, like the remaining conservatives in the Senate, and use whatever rules of Parliament, maybe, just maybe, this awful decision by Trudeau to ram through censorship on the eve of the election could be stopped or even slowed down just to delay it till after the election. It could be done. I mean, Trudeau could still force it through for sure. He's got an absolute majority. But if Andrew Scheer made a big enough fuss, I think he could make this too costly for Trudeau. And Trudeau would abandon it, as he abandons many things that get tough to do. I think Trudeau could back down. I really believe that. But it won't happen if Andrew Scheer won't do it. And he's not doing it. The NDP loves Section 13. This is an emergency now. All of those freedoms will be washed away. Stephen Harper's achievement will be wiped out. So please sign our petition right now to Andrew Scheer It's simple. You can see it at stopsection13.com. It simply says, we call upon Andrew Scheer to stand up for freedom of speech by opposing the revival of Section 13 of the Canadian Human Rights Act. Well, it says. He promised he'd be for free speech when he ran for Conservative leader. The Conservative Party was unanimously for free speech under Stephen Harper. The country needs free speech. We need an opposition to oppose censorship. It's easy for him to do. If he's worried about what the country thinks, he'll be in good stead. Canadians like free speech, but these days, I'm worried that Andrew Scheer cares more about what the media party thinks than what Canadians think. Please sign our petition at stopsection13.com, and I will personally deliver it to Andrew Scheer myself. Go to stopsection13.com. That's an excerpt from the...
And that's the Rebel. Very well said, and very, very needed. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Here's a commentary by my good friend Jerry Neal in Manitoba, how Captain Airhead, that's Justin Trudeau, makes Andrew Scheer look much better than he really is. The Conservative Party of Canada really ought to be paying Captain Airhead a salary. He is the best publicity man they have. He's been doing a much better job of promoting their cause in the upcoming Dominion election, that's this October, than their own lackluster leadership. I do not mean merely that he makes them look good by being such a lousy, awful, and indeed downright horrible alternative, although that is certainly the case. What I mean is that if there were a speck of truth to be found in any of his recent scaremongering accusations against conservatives, the party would certainly rise in my esteem as it would that of any sensible person and sane person. Evelyn Waugh once said that the problem with the Conservative Party was that it had not turned the clock back to a single second. And the Canadian incarnation of the party, that Evelyn Waugh was of course an Englishman, and the Canadian incarnation of the party has given no indication that it plans to do so anytime in the near future. Yet Justin Trudeau would have us believe that Conservatives, if elected, would set the clock back by about 100 years. My response to which is to say that if this happens, it would be a good start, but we need to go much further back than that. To say this, of course, is to commit the unpardonable sin of the modern age, blasphemy against the spirit of progress. It is a sin to which I gladly and unrepentantly plead guilty. And this is Jerry Neal writing. Readers of the C.S. Lewis Chronicles of Narnia might recall how in the voyage of the Dawn Treader, Governor Dumpus of the Lone Islands, upon being told by King Caspian that the slave trade must be stopped, protests. But that would be putting the clock back. Adding, have you no idea of progress or development? To which Caspian replies, I have seen them both in an egg. We call it going bad in Narnia. Needless to say, I subscribe to Caspian's and Lewis's view of progress. This is the view of genuine British and Canadian Toryism, that progress does not happen, and if it does, it is a bad thing, and we need to put a stop to it. Sadly, the Canadian Conservative Party of our day, like the British Conservative Party of Waugh's day, has abandoned the more authentic views of their tradition for something closer to American republicanism, which worships at the altar of the same idol of progress as liberalism and the left. Justin Trudeau is deluded if he seriously thinks otherwise. And this is Jerry Neal's commentary. I'm not going to dwell at any length on Trudeau's accusations that Andrew Scheer is in bed with racists, white supremacists, and white nationalists, as I've already dealt with that in another essay. It shows how extremely unhealthy the political climate has become in present-day Canada, that these labels can be attached to people who do not so describe themselves, and who neither subscribe to a racialist ideology like National Socialism, nor have engaged in violent rhetoric or actions against either as individuals or organized groups toward other races. All that one needs to do is to oppose a particular kind of racism, that is the anti-white racism manifested in the immigration policy of making this country as diverse as possible, as fast as possible, and hence at least as white as possible, in the progressive notion that all whites and only whites are racist, and in the cartoonish rewriting of history into a bad melodrama in which whites are assigned the role of the mustache-twirling villain in the top hat and large black coat, and everyone else plays the helpless maiden to whom he is tied to the railroad track. Heck, one does not even have to actively oppose this anti-white racism himself. It is sufficient to be seen in the same room as someone who does. My respect for Mr. Scheer and the Conservative Party would skyrocket if they actually did take a bold, consistent, and principled stand against this pervasive form of progressive anti-white racism. But I'm not holding my breath waiting for that to happen. The accusations against them are entirely of the "you were seen with so-and-so, who said such and such" variety. Indeed, the disgusting manner in which Mr. Andrew Scheer threw Member of Parliament Michael Cooper under the bus, the fact that he seems to have enforced silence upon his party about the Grit's disturbing plan to bring back the vile Section 13 of the Canadian Human Rights Act, and the way in which Warren Kinsella, of all people, who has been defending Scheer against Trudeau's charges using arguments amusingly similar to those I would have used to ridicule Kinsella's book of 25 years ago, Web of Hate, all point inevitably to the conclusion that Scheer, like Harper before him, is on the same side as Trudeau on these issues, leaving the many Canadians who wish for the freedom to think differently from Kinsella, Richard Warman, Bernie Farber, Harry Abrams, Helmut Harry Lowen, and others of that ilk, without anyone in Parliament to speak for them. What I'm more interested in, and this is Jerry Neal writing, in addressing here are Captain Airhead's accusations of what he considers to be sexism. Back when Stephen Harper was Conservative leader, the Liberals were constantly accusing him of having a hidden agenda, that is to recriminalize abortion. Trudeau, who has constructed a political image of himself as a male feminist, which has taken a severe beating over the last couple of years for reasons that I will not go into here, and who, as part of that image, takes a rather clownish over-the-top hard line, "it's a woman's right" stance on abortion, has revived the old hidden agenda line for use against Scheer. He has been able to use recent events south of the border, where several states have passed strong anti-abortion legislation now that there's a perceived right-wing majority on the Supreme Court in the U.S., in the hopes of provoking a legal battle that will end in the overturning of Roe versus Wade. And Trudeau has used this to help stoke the feminist fears in part of his base. Again, if there were the slightest amount of truth to Trudeau's accusations, the Conservative Party's stock would certainly rise in my books. I remember very well, however, that while Stephen Harper allowed a pro-life people to run for his party, at a time even as the other major party leaders began telling them that they were persona non grata, this was the extent of his so-called support for the pro-life cause. Pro-life people were allowed to run as conservatives, but woe to them if they actually tried to do something to end abortion. There is not the slightest amount of evidence that things are any different now. This is extremely unfortunate for Canada because the current status quo on abortion, of which Trudeau is so proud, is an ever-growing bloodstain on our country that cries out to heaven for divine justice. And there are no realistic options for changing that status quo that do not require action by the Conservatives in the Dominion Parliament. Even if it could be accomplished at the provincial level, which it cannot, the provincial Conservatives seem to have no more inclination to do that than their federal counterparts. The right populist premier of Upper Canada, that's the province of Ontario, assured the media last month after Progressives threw a tantrum when one of his MPs pledged at a pro-life rally to make abortion unthinkable in our lifetime that his government will not reopen the abortion debate. Even more recently, the provincial government here in Manitoba has announced that an abortion pill will now be fully covered by the public through Medicare. There are many health care products and services which are necessary to help people who are suffering from excruciating pain or in danger of going blind, which are not fully covered by the public. But a pill that murders babies soon will be. Well, this is Paul Fromm. I'm going to take my musical break right now. I'm going to start off with a song by Pam Tillis. And Pam is the daughter of the late Mel Tillis. This is Dwight Yoakam. Turn it on, turn it up, turn me loose. Thank you.
Bob Yoakum, here's Lori Morgan. What part of no don't you understand? Wrap it up with Johnny Russell, Rednecks, White Sox, and Blue Ribbon Beer.
There's no place that I'd rather be than right here, my redneck, White Sox, and Blue Ribbon Beer. The barmaid is mad 'cause some guy made a pass. The jukebox is playing, there stands the glass. The cigarette smoke kind of hangs in the air. Rednecks, White Sox, and Blue Ribbon Beer. The cowboy's cussing, pinball machine. A drunk at the bar, getting noisy and mean. And some guy on the phone says, I'll be home soon, dear. Rednecks, White Sox, and Blue Ribbon Beer. No, we don't fit in with that white collar crowd. We're a little too rowdy and a little too loud. But there's no place that I'd rather be than right here, with my redneck, White Sox, and Blue Ribbon Beer. The semis passing on the highway outside. The 4:30 crowd is about to arrive. The sun's going down and we'll all soon. Rednecks, White Sox, and Blue Ribbon Beer. No, we don't fit in with that white
place that I'd rather be than right here with my redneck white socks and blue ribbon beer. There's no place that I'd rather be than right here with my redneck white socks and blue ribbon beer.
This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me, back with you again tomorrow night. Same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, would the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever.